Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 6th of October. It is 12 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. An absolute delight to have you with us this morning. We love just thinking, knowing that you're there and listening to us and trying to make sense of the world along with us. We very much appreciate it. We always welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. The appreciation doesn't necessarily mean that we are going to read them, but we certainly welcome them. Panel at WAMC.org. We get to as many as we possibly can, but we do get far more than we can ever get to on the air. So let me introduce everybody and we will get started. We begin with WAMC's Alan Shartok, who is in studio this morning. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm just fine. You know, I'm just fine, and thank you for asking.
I am glad to see you are fine. I'm seeing you right here. You look fine.
Yeah.
I can second that.
That's very kind of you. It really is.
We go down to former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. I just miss the days when we all could be in the same studio because the off-mic conversations were sometimes better than the on-mic conversations.
Yes, that's very, very true. Yeah, there's none of that now, but that is that's fine. I have more bathroom breaks, I've noticed that. But other than that, it's really no difference. Mike, it's really wonderful to have you here. We also welcome investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. We also welcome Bard Center for Civic Engagement Senior Fellow and Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University in Cairo, Jim Ketterer. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. I hope everyone is well. I agree with Mike. I also miss those times when we could gather in person. What a novel idea.
Well, it is. You know, we got a letter right before the show from Adam, and Adam says to us, could we maybe talk about something other than Trump today? The stupidity doesn't warrant the acknowledgement. Well, I don't know what to do about that. I can't think of anything that we could talk about without a dereliction of duty other than what has gone on over the last 24 hours, which is just mind-blowing, and I think we need to. So I'm sorry, Adam, we're not going to honor your request. However, we'll talk about other stuff eventually, but I think there's some elephants in the room that we have to address before we move on. We would very much like to talk about other stuff. God knows. We'd love to talk about other stuff, but that is difficult. All right, so let us begin with the obvious here and talk about what happened. The president returned to the White House, downplaying the virus that hospitalized him and turned the White House, the West Wing, excuse me, into a ghost town. President Trump returned to the White House from the hospital on Monday, saying that he had recovered from the novel coronavirus and that people should not be afraid of a disease that has killed more than 209,000 Americans. Trump's comments a few hours before leaving Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, again downplaying the coronavirus, came despite evidence that the White House decisions to flout public health guidelines and engage in practices viewed as reckless have had dire consequences in the West Wing. More than a dozen White House officials have tested positive for the coronavirus in recent days, a steadily increasing total that grew again to include Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. How the return of an infected president to such a setting could be managed safely was one of several questions left unanswered as Trump's medical team briefed reporters about his condition. The doctor for President Trump, Sean Conley, said after describing the president's condition as improving, though he said Trump was, quote, not out of the woods yet. Conley declined to describe what specific steps would be made to ensure a safe environment at a building that doubles as a personal residence and a government office while the president remains contagious, which could be for several more days. A lot more there, obviously, but we'll start with those few tidbits. There was, of course, the grand return to the White House, which was a made-for-TV event where the Marine One dropped down on the South Lawn of the White House. The president got out and walked up the steps to the residence and took his mask off and with great flourish put it in his pocket and gave a thumbs up gesture. So, with all of that, Alan.
Well, I want to go back, if I may, Joe, just to Adam, because I keep thinking about that letter, and I just want everybody to understand. Here is a man who threatens to lead this country into a fascistic state. How could we not talk about him? How could we not talk about what he has done to this country and what he continues to do to this country and where he wants to take us? I don't know anything that could be more important than our discussion of what he's up to and how he's doing it so that we're prepared to deal with it as it keeps evolving. Now, in terms of his showing off yesterday, it was disgusting. The idea that this guy has led this country into over 210,000 deaths right now by not telling people to wear masks. And then taking that mask off, which they made him wear at Walter Reed, in front of everybody symbolically to say, you don't need this mask and this COVID is not that serious. And it is once again something that comes out of an absolute nightmare. I have no idea how this has happened to the American people and why. But I can only say that this is as bad as it's going to get in this country, in my opinion.
Rosemary.
On the other hand, I think the media did pay too much attention to him. Not us today talking about it, but the gavel-to-gavel coverage of his trip back from Walter Reed to the White House. I thought we weren't going to do that anymore and only show what was newsworthy. That was the newsworthy things are not the things I think that Trump wanted to see. It was his breathing, very labored and through an open mouth when he was on the top of the staircase. He is a sick man who is projecting, actually, the image of someone who breaks rules, which is exactly what his supporters want. And I don't think they realize what a high price they are paying for the sake of a rule breaker in the White House. He's not hurt us. Really, that much. You know, my everyday life has not changed all that much from him.
Not yet.
But people who are
farmers, you know, Rosemary,
coal men, their lives are affected right now. And this is all for the sake of saying, oh, we got the elites. Yeah, you really got us.
You know, Rosemary, I was just reading something, I think in the Times, which it may not have been the Times, may have been one of the other things I was reading, that something like, you know, a third, and maybe it was worse than that, that's all I remember, of the people who have this disease are affected severely psychologically. And that plays right into what you've been saying.
Well, and also just the fact that, yeah, maybe one of the reasons that he is feeling better than he has in 20 years is that he's hopped up on steroids. I mean, I just don't, you know, that obviously plays into it. Every doctor has said that. I mean, I don't know that. I don't think anybody does. But it certainly is a question. Rosemary, I just want to go back to you for a second because I was struck by what you said about the media coverage last night. I had to turn it off because it was so breathless and everybody, and that was, I mean, pretty much on all networks. But it was.
What do you mean breathless?
Yep.
Meaning that everything he did was like, can you believe he's doing this? Can you believe he's doing this? Well, yes, he's been doing this for 4 years. This is exactly what he's doing. Can you believe he took the mask off? Can you believe he did this? Can you believe he's making a show out of it? And meanwhile, they're broadcasting the show.
Same when he flew to Walter Reed and that helicopter sat there. How long did we look at a screen with a helicopter on it? It was like a long, boring child's game again. And so Trump is getting all this promotional free airtime. Does it remind you of 2016 at all?
It does. It does. And it scared me last night because we were, as you say, that they were saying, on one hand, the networks were saying, I heard it on MSNBC, I heard it on CNN. They were all saying, this is a well-produced show. Right. It is. So why are you showing it?
Okay, Joe.
I think that's
interesting. If you were the news director, and Rosemary, I'd love you to take a crack at this one too, would you have done it at CNN or MSNBC, knowing that the other guys will do it if you don't do it?
I'll yield to Rosemary, but to answer your question, I wouldn't have done it the way they had did it, in the sense of I would have covered him returning with the tape of him waving. I would have covered, obviously, that he was leaving Walter Reed. He had arrived back at the White House. The thing I'm talking about is playing the full video that they did, that he did afterwards.
Yeah.
That's a campaign material is what that is. And to play that over and over and over and over again. And to they showed him from a distance going up the stairs. That was very different from then when they allowed the pool reporters to give their footage, which was much more choreographed. Rosemary, I yield to you.
I think that the networks now have made sort of a pledge that they're not going to give him this complete coverage anymore. And what they meant, of course, were his political shows. This is a political show under the guise of medicine. But no, I think the correct way to handle that would have been, of course, to report that he had left and it was en route and you're there filming it. And I think I would have shown the point where he pulled off the mask. That was, I think, newsworthy. That
yep.
defiance is newsworthy. He didn't need an hour, 90 minutes for it. And whoever said it, talked about the breathless coverage is right. I watched Joy Reid last night on MSNBC, and I could hardly bear it. She's just apoplectic with the indignation at what he's doing. And while that's personally understandable, I don't think it gets to his supporters, and it even turned me off, who's a Trump hater. So I think we still don't have the coverage of Trump down. He is still manipulating the media.
Don't get me wrong, guys. Rosemary and Joe, I absolutely understand what you're saying. I'm just simply saying, if you were the news director, you got to remove yourself from these views of how.
I think that's exactly what I mean. I think as news director, I think as someone, I think you have a responsibility to, as Rosemary said, to cover what happens, and to see it coming in. But this playing it over and over and over.
Well, it
and
was
over
sickening.
Again, that's hard to take. And it went on all day yesterday. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, yes, it was completely choreographed. It was golden sunset, American flags, him walking up the steps. I could hear the theme from 2001 Space Odyssey. But the problem is that, as appalling as that is to many people, it's important for people to be appalled and to see what it is. It was like when they cleared Lafayette Square a few months ago so
yes.
they could walk over to St. John's Church and hold a Bible.
Yep.
It's as putrid as that. And yet, I completely agree with Rosemary that the problem is someone will watch that and they'll say, wow. You know, I mean, there's like two different audiences, two different realities. One is complete disgust with the way that this is being manipulated and the arrogance and the you know, he stuck up his thumbs, but it may as well have been his middle finger to science and medicine.
Funny.
And he, right.
Yeah.
I mean, and then we others will look at it and say, he's my man. You know,
I just, not splitting hairs here, I just want to make the distinction. I do think that everything that was covered should have been covered, with the exception of there was a made-for-television event. They had a crew there to do a video. They had the backdrop, and then the networks, at least the cable networks, played it over and over and over again. And that's really where my issue is. It is, and that was where we got all the information, or the, you know, maybe I'm immune, who knows, that kind of thing. And that's the stuff that even to be played once is one thing. But the way that it was being repeated over and over and over again, I think, is concerning.
So we hear.
But I mean, in these news cycles, it's a 24-hour news cycle, and then, I mean, it's you know what it is. It's 20 minutes of news, and then it gets replayed with a little more spin, replayed a little changed. I mean, these 24-hour news cycles have put us in a situation where this is what happens all the time. And Rosemary, you're right. This is what happened in 2016. Remember when CNN was playing his entire campaign speeches and rallies because it was giving them great ratings.
Right.
And what it was doing was propelling Trump forward.
Exactly. You know, the other part of this is, if you watch CNN, which had been very moderate in the beginning, they are not anymore.
No.
The gloves are off. So they may be playing this stuff, whatever I'm thinking, what word starts with S. They've been playing, yeah, that's right. They've been playing this stuff. Nevertheless, they are saying again and again and again how outrageous it all is.
Right. And it's just, but that breathless indignation, as I said, is what, to Rosemary's point, is difficult after a while. Because, you know, if you see a guy on the corner and he's poking himself in the face with a fork, you know, after the 15th day, you're like, oh, that's a guy who pokes himself in the face with a fork, and you kind of move on.
Good point.
You know, there's that. Jim, I want to get you in here before the break. What do you think?
Sure. I just think that I agree with what everyone has said. But, you know, for the president of the United States to be telling people not to be afraid of COVID, while the days are getting colder, more people will be inside, the numbers are going up, you know, we need people to kind of redouble their efforts and be vigilant. It's beyond outrageous. I mean, it is just absolutely lethal to so many people. It's disrespectful to the people who have already died, 210,000 plus, and the many more who are ill and are in peril. I mean, it's beyond outrageous. And for him to say that he has acted as a real leader would act, I mean, what specifically is he saying that he's done that is the essence of real leadership? Flouting science, imperiling our fellow citizens.
Churchill.
I mean, what in the world? You know, I mean, I think this is really, for all the things that he's done, even before he was president, all the outrageous things that he's done, this really was yet another low.
It's certain, yes, absolutely. And Rosemary, the point you were making, we only have about a minute, but the point you were making about...
Oh, I wanted to tell Jim, I wanted to hear his reaction to this. Hannity compared him to Churchill.
And FDR.
Churchillian leadership.
Yeah.
Oh, and right. And I think Trump himself in the past has compared himself to Churchill. They're shameless, absolutely shameless. They don't know anything about actual history either, but in terms of what's going on now, they're beyond shameless.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back and continue our conversation with our wonderful panel. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer make it up. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Keep them short, keep them to the point, and we'll get to them right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer making up the panel this morning. We thank you very much for being with us. Again, panel@wamc.org. Have some letters here that I'd like to get to. Allison writes, I'm not a Trump supporter, but hearing all of the incredibly skeptical and even, as Rosemary said, apoplectic news coverage yesterday made me wonder, what if he did get better? What if he wasn't such a big deal for him? Of course, he and all of us should wear masks, but maybe he got better and wasn't all that sick, and the skeptics will all have egg on their faces. Lots of people are testing positive these days, but not sick. I think a lot of answers to that. Allison, for Allison, who would like to take it?
Well, you just have to look at the doctors and the differing and the contradictory information that they've been releasing. That is, oxygen levels dropped a couple of times, which is a serious problem. That he was on oxygen, evidently, and this is not news. Everybody has pointed this out. But, I mean, you know, he has the very, very, very best medical coverage in the world. He was helicoptered to, where experts were there giving him drugs that you and I can't get, pumping them full of steroids, which does kind of, you know, if people are sick or feeling bad, steroids will immediately correct that. It won't last forever. And then you have... drug therapy that's experimental, things that are just not available to everybody. And he has it all available. So I don't know how you can compare that to somebody who gets sick, somebody in America who just comes down with the disease. It's hit or miss, I agree, but, you know.
Well, also, well,
all of that is true. And
yes.
But I think he's better than he's acting. If you watch him at the top of the stairs yesterday, and on Rachel Maddow, also on my MSNBC watching last night, she had a close-up of it. The Lincoln Project is running with that today, all this anti-Trump stuff. But at the top of the stairs, he was breathing through his mouth. He was gasping for breath. Why was he on all those experimental drugs that, yes, they cost a whole lot, nobody else can get them. But if you're not really sick, you don't get them. I think he's much sicker than he's letting on, and we've not heard the end of this.
I agree. I mean, you're not really left with much else to think. I mean, when the doctors come out and, as Mike indicated, say we're still not out of the woods on this, and the next couple of days will be critical. Also, what everyone, even the doctor we had on yesterday, Dr. Fagan, was saying, you know, we're in the midst of this. I know there is a, I don't have it in front of me, but I know there is a post going around on Facebook about Herman Cain and what he went through of going to the rally, getting tested, and then 7 days later, you know, feeling great, 8 days later, feeling great, 9 days later, going back to the hospital, 10 days later, feeling better, and then, you know, dead. So not to say that that's the case here, but to say that this is a disease that stays with you, and it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell exactly what's going on. And again, we all are relying on science, which is not something that the White House is doing.
And you know, Joe, we don't know what's going to happen to this guy, to the president. I'm not predicting anything, but all the doctors are saying that he is not out of the woods yet, and that it's at this stage that things can really go awry. Here we are in this presidential campaign. He's making a fool out of himself, leading the American people in the wrong direction when it comes to taking care of themselves. It is beyond belief.
And even if he completely recovers, and he is fine, and he's one of the lucky ones, to take that one case and say, well, therefore it's really not that dangerous for everybody, it's engaging in some kind of over-the-top magical thinking that is truly dangerous. Of course, not everybody who gets the illness dies, but still a frightening percentage of people do get seriously ill, and a frightening percentage of them die. That's just the reality. And because one person gets through, doesn't die, doesn't mean that it's not dangerous.
Also, Jim,
Yeah,
and Jim, talk a little bit of where he's returning to, which is a White House, which has pretty much been decimated by this disease.
Yeah, I was wondering, I assume he wanted to go back to the White House. He wanted those photo ops and all of that, and he wanted to appear to be a strong leader. I guess if, he convinced the doctors that he should be released, wouldn't it have made more sense to send him to Camp David or someplace where he could be sectioned off from anybody else that he would infect, staff and family alike, and ride this out, but also be able to work if that's what he
right.
is up to doing. I mean, to come back to the White House seems to be, purely for optics
and
a dangerous move.
Well, exactly. He doesn't give a damn. I mean, you can send him to Camp David or any other place, that doesn't achieve what he wants to achieve in terms of this campaign.
Right, and I'm sitting behind the desk, and I'm in charge,
and
I'm the
leader. Can we talk for a minute about the spinelessness of the doctors? Walter Reed's reputation should and deserves to suffer because of this whole fiasco. And his personal doctor, Dooley, oh, my God, he needs to watch Olivia Troy to find out how you deal with an impossible
Conway, I believe, but go ahead.
That he was.
You know, Conway
yeah,
as in 007.
Go ahead.
Not quite.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Rosemary. It's just like the CDC. It's like the FDA. The credibility of Walter Reed and his medical team has now been severely compromised. And his actions send this erroneous message that, as Jim was saying, that it's safe, it's okay. And other people will now tear off their masks. They'll stop practicing good hygiene and social distancing. And some people are going to get sick because of what he did yesterday and worse, perhaps. And that's a terrible thing.
Well, and it's also difficult, I think, anyway, that you turn around and say, this is nothing. You have to persevere. You get over it. You get through it. People in his own administration. I mean, Chris Christie's still in the hospital, and
Herman Cain is dead.
And so we know that Kayleigh McEnany, who tested positive and announced yesterday that she tested positive for COVID, announced it yesterday. I mean, she was on the White House lawn on Sunday. It doesn't seem to me that we have seen the end of this, and the meaning that more people within the White House, the president is indicating that it's full steam ahead. They're going ahead with the debate on Wednesday, tomorrow night, with Vice President Pence, who was last in contact, we are told, with the president last Tuesday, just 2 days before he tested positive, which may be not the truth, and he tested positive earlier than was told to us.
Remember when Pharaoh said that, you know, he would let the Jews go, and he kept changing his mind. He kept saying, no, I won't, and it ended up a total catastrophe. I'm sure that nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. I'm so sorry.
When Moses would go,
no, in other words,
when Moses would go and petition him to get the to let his people out of
yeah,
Egypt,
and Pharaoh would agree, and then he would change his mind.
Then he'd change his mind. Yeah.
I know we're all talking science here, but there is.
Oh, he's talking
else.
Charlton Heston there.
When all else fails, bring out Chuck. All right. We got this from Beverly, who says, has anyone ever calculated the cost to taxpayers for these Trump displays? Are taxpayers paying for a presidential display for the Trump campaign? I'm guessing this is another murky Trump created dilemma. Rosemary, I'll farm that out to you, but I believe that David Fahrenthold and others certainly have been keeping track of this.
Yeah, they are. They're working on the cost of Secret Service coverage and the cost of ripping up and then putting the lawns back together in the White House. He used the White House again last night the same way he did during his Republican National Conference as a backdrop, as a big symbol of democracy, in a crass and yet smart marketing move, and that costs us money. It's that's above and beyond the cost of what he's doing to the country, you know, to the lives that he's putting at risk.
You know, 20 years ago, I had a friend, he had a big yacht. And this is 20 years ago. And he said, you know, every time I turn that key, it's $200. Just turn the key, it's $200.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what that helicopter cost yesterday?
No. Let's see. Kathleen writes to us and says, Trump gave a massive middle finger to his entire medical staff, White House staff, officials, and the country when he took off that mask. Also a question.
Well, don't you think, Joe, I'm sorry, don't you think it's shame on that doctor, on the doctors? And the other thing is that the people at Walter Reed were compliant. It was his own personal doctor who was offensive. But the other guys stood there, and that's a different story.
Well, there were two cases, as Dr. Fagan said yesterday, and I'm certainly not defending them, but I am saying that, you know, they're military. Most of them are military doctors and the commander-in-chief, and it's ultimately up to the patient of what they want to do. The fact that this has never been a problem before, there have been a lot of people, I think any of us who have been in a hospital for an extended stay wants to get the hell out, and we yell, scream, but we don't get out.
No, this is not true. Medical doctors have a different responsibility. Walter Reed could have said, we're releasing him against doctor's orders. His own doctor, Dooley, who is an osteopath, has no business treating a man this important with such a horrible disease.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's...
But they're impossible. You quit an impossible job and say, it's impossible, I can't do it right. You don't just do a lousy job and defend yourself, saying, oh, I had no choice. No, you don't do that. It's not honorable.
I just want to correct. The doctor's name is Sean Conley, Dr. Conley.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Rosemary had said Dooley. So,
oh.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct that. That's all.
But also, there are many great osteopaths, DOs, who are just as good as MDs. I wouldn't go as far as putting him down for that reason.
Did we do that?
No, Rosemary said he's an osteopath.
Well, but the question is also the five or six people that are behind him, what are they? What is their responsibility?
That is the question.
And also, as was previously mentioned on the panel about the concern over the reputation of Walter Reed. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will return and we'll go into many more details of this particular story, as well as others. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from NatureWorks Organic Land Care, specializing in innovative ecological landscape construction of outdoor living spaces, landscape design, installation, and maintenance. NatureWorksLandCare.com. And Belvedere Home Care, working to provide dedicated care in our community for those in need, offering career positions to those interested in home care. BelvedereHealthServices.com/careers for information.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Barry says, please comment on President Trump's Medicare not available to most ordinary Americans. Those that are not able to get the extra special medical care only available to persons of means, getting the best Medicare available and experimental drugs available to no one else. True, but do we know if it works or not? We haven't gotten that far, right?
No, but, you know, no sense. So you try. I mean, they're giving...
Yeah, you throw everything against the wall.
Look. If you take a look back at American history and see, was it Garfield who died? I don't remember who. And the doctor put his hand inside of him. You may remember that, and ended up being vilified.
Yeah, when Garfield was wounded, right, and probably hastened his death. Certainly didn't prevent it.
Right. So everybody's being very careful.
I have to tell you why I mixed up Connolly's name with Dooley.
Yes.
It's because one of our listeners sent us a parody saying, hang down your head, Sean Dooley, hang down your head and die.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So I'm blaming him for my misspeaking.
All right. Let's see. We got this from Diane. Don't let COVID become your life, quoting the president. Ask my stepson, 7 weeks in the hospital, 4 weeks in rehab, learning how to breathe again, another 6 weeks at home, weaning himself off oxygen cylinders, learning how to use the strength he had for important things like getting from the bed to the toilet. He's back to work now. He considers himself incredibly humbled.
And not to say anything about the over 210,000 people who are dead because of this, and you dismiss it as being not that important.
We go to Ruth. I wonder how many White House staffers have contracted COVID, office staff, maids, kitchen staff, et cetera, et cetera. Those are numbers that reporters have been trying to get. And in most cases, from my understanding, and Mike or anyone can correct me on this, but my understanding is that that level of staff was told to go to their own primary care doctors and would not be under the auspices of the White House physicians.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to work from home like a lot of the other White House staffers were.
Can you imagine? I think every eye in America was on the photographer last night.
Behind him. Like, what are you doing?
Are you crazy?
Right. I mean,
Is it worth it?
Man. I watched Biden's town hall, the Yankee game, Leslie says, I watched Biden's town hall, the Yankee game, and an Instagram live cooking show last night. I didn't see any of Trump's theatrics live. We need to tune it out or jeopardize our own mental health. Leslie, I completely agree with you. I just don't know how to do it.
I don't agree.
I turned off the TV. I stomped out. I screamed. I yelled. And I went right back and turned it back on.
Roselle won't watch it either. But I have to tell you, it is, think just one word, think Mussolini, and you understand why this is so important.
Absolutely. Jennifer
said. Somebody's calling him Trumpolini. I like that, but my favorite comment came from my friend Chase, who watched this and has been watching all of this and says, he's not a very good president. I don't like presidential disease or sports.
Yeah, I don't.
He's not a very good president.
There's
an understatement.
I want my presidents who don't catch disease. Is that, yeah?
Yes, I was also watching the Yankee game too.
You also were watching the Yankee game. Patriots were on last night too. It was a bloodbath, but they were on. As a nurse practitioner with experience in pulmonary medicine, I have to tell you, says Joyce, this video will backfire. Trump was clearly in respiratory distress, as evidenced by use of accessory muscles for breathing, shoulder shrugging, a tracheal tug, the area under his chin, agitated movements, and some pursed lip breathing. It was obvious to just about everyone. I'm worried about his prognosis and hope he survives to go down in flames on November 3rd. That from Joyce.
You know, that's a very interesting point. Rosemary, were you the one who made the point, or somebody made the point a little while ago about the doctors are military people and they do what their commander-in-chief says? And I was struck by that, and I'll tell you why. Because when I heard that, I'm saying, okay, because everybody assures me that if he tries to stay in office and he calls on the Army, they won't listen to him. So now we have pretty good example of people who are doing things because their commander-in-chief tells them to. That scares the stuffing out of me.
Yeah.
And I think Johns Hopkins physician and not a military
officer.
That's
right. That is correct.
And that's one of the doctors who, as they all would come up to the microphone, they would all go through the routine of saying what an honor it was to be working on this team. And after a while, it really started to seem like a bad movie.
A circle.
We'll keep it there.
Yeah, no, Alan, I was taken by the notion that I saw that same story that said up to 30% of people who are experiencing the symptoms of COVID have a mental capacity deficit. And, you know, how will you even know? And who's, you know, and
with
who's going to tell them that? And then what weight does it have when that plays into his decisions to leave the hospital twice now?
Or go read the 25th, or go, Mike, go read the 25th Amendment one more time about when a president is in distress and how he should be handing stuff over to the vice president or whatever. That ain't happening.
Well, and the president announced that he's going to be back on the campaign trail in just days. He's going to be doing the debate on the 15th, he says. So, I mean, that's all very concerning, considering that's just a few days away, and he's still in the throes of this disease.
You bet.
So we'll go to Robert now, who says the president most likely signed himself out of the hospital, which we all have the option to do. I'm just waiting for him to ride bare-chested on a horse a la Putin. And Robert apologizes, saying, sorry, I did put that image in your head. Trisha,
I'm thinking about his hair, Joe. You know, how much did Rosemary, you're the keeper of facts. How much did they say in the tax thing that he spent on his hair?
$75,000, right?
Oh, my God. I can't remember. $75,000?
Yeah, $75,000.
Yes, $75,000. Okay. I looked at his hair last night based on that, and it looked terrible. So you see what these images can mean, why you spend that kind of money. I didn't think he looked well at all, and I don't know.
Let's see. We go to Nancy, who says the White House is well-equipped for delivering a moderate level of medical treatment. That is true. He should have stayed in the hospital nonetheless. Also, we got this from Trisha. Hey, panel. Let's also discuss the positive side of this dire situation. We have a fine leader waiting to pull our country out of its tailspin, VP Joe Biden, who had a great town hall yesterday, which I did see, and it was quite good.
Yeah, but the people who keep making the point that...
Miami, he was very good.
Yeah, but the people who keep making the point that Biden is not getting the kind of coverage he deserves because of Trump's omnipresence,
yes,
are correct. They're right. No two ways about it.
Yes, they are. Let's see. Careful, panel. Yes, you're covering an important topic, but after 30 minutes now, you're entering into the type of redundant coverage that Joe criticized in the beginning. Shift gears. All right. We go to Carolyn, who says, should we insist on a drug test for performance-enhancing drugs before the next presidential debate? It's all the steroids.
That's right. And let's just stay with the steroids for a minute, Joe. What we heard from, I believe, yesterday from our wonderful physician, Jim Fagan, was that steroids can lead to personality changes.
Right. Well, they can give you a false sense of self. And to
that
make
would
you
be
feel
impossible in his case.
Much better. You can feel much better than you actually do. And also, there are some of the there are some side effects that impact your mental acuity. But
have you ever heard the term roid rage?
Right, roid rage.
I had not, but I'll use it.
Jennifer says, I literally think the last nerve I had exploded when I saw his photo op salute last night, maskless, the long, long, very weird salute like he was overseeing his imaginary military parade he always wanted. Is there nothing, no accountability for his role in these deaths? The Congress just watches him kill people. S.O.S.
I guess he's over the bone spur now.
Yeah, I mean, Jennifer is right. I mean, that's how I felt last night. And you just, yeah, it's hard to see. Like, I was watching CNN for a while, and they had Bob Woodward on, and they had David Gergen on. And David Gergen says, you know, we're in the throes of a madman, and he was just almost crying. And Woodward was basically making the same plea that somebody has to take control and who's in charge.
So after Fauci, you know, and everything, that he's just gotten yet another award as the best person in government.
Yeah.
After Fauci, I would say Gergen is right up there in my estimation. He's, you know, he was late to the game. He was very concerned from the very beginning of you know, being fair, but he is now outraged.
Let's see. We have about a minute and a half, and I'll try to get to two letters here. Ken says, if you watch the video of Trump taking his mask off carefully, he is visibly gasping for breath and wincing. Rosemary is right. He is sick in more ways than one. This is a Potemkin recovery. And finally, we go to Tony, finally before we go to break, in other words. Tony says, while Mike heard the theme from 2001, A Space Odyssey, I heard the theme from Mr. Magoo, The Benny Hill Show, and The Keystone Cops.
Except there were 210, Tony, I get it, but there were 210,000 people dead as a result of this. That's hardly The Keystone Cops.
And he said,
there's a large percentage of the country that supports this behavior,
right?
Large enough.
40%, 40%, and it doesn't change.
All right, let's take a break. We'll pause, and when we come back, we'll continue with our wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 5 minutes past 10 o'clock, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer are making up the program and our panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. Okay. Go back to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to some other aspects of this story. And by this story, I mean the election, the Supreme Court, all things that are going around. Let's see. We go to Paul. A word about the toadies around this sick man, a group that now includes the faux White House physician, Sean Conley. History will judge them as being complicit in destroying our society and economy. Of course, their thoughtless behavior indicates they don't care about history or anything beyond their immediate interests. Our best response, a clean sweep on November 3rd. Ken says, I haven't heard anything about the First Lady regarding her health. What's up with that?
Well, there is a report in the press now that her former best friend is spilling the beans about her conversations with Melania. And apparently the thing about Melania that we didn't know is that she's very conversant with the F word and uses it a lot.
But
well,
she
sure
did
can't
say.
Well, I fault her for that.
No.
There's a lot on the internet about how she's staying indoors. She's wearing a mask, and unlike her idiot husband, is refusing to go out and expose her Secret Service agents to the disease. She's getting favorable coverage for her behavior.
Right, and she is much younger. She's only 50 years old, which puts her in a much better demographic for getting through this, and she is not obese, if you might have noticed.
Ruth says, well, theatrics are not. It worked, didn't it? Have you heard a word about the president's tax evasion since Friday? Have you heard any more about the debate disaster? And have you seen or heard any coverage on the Biden-Harris campaign?
Great letter.
I would add the Supreme Court in there, too.
True, though. It isn't true. Yes, I've heard stuff on all of those. I watch and read probably more news than most people, but all of those things are being covered. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. His taxes are still there. Discussion about whether this medical thing is a distraction from that is on air and in print. Biden, how he's pulled ads. All of that has been covered. It's a very nice idea, but it isn't true.
Very respectfully, Rosemary, I don't agree. I think it's a matter of proportion. Whereas we were hearing about each of those things in great detail when they happened, we're not hearing them now. Now, somebody may discuss it. Rachel Maddow may discuss it. Other people may, but not nearly the kind of attention that it was getting before.
Well, the other thing I wonder about, Rosemary, is, you know, I think we were all waiting for more on the taxes from the Times. Do you think they're just holding what they were going to do? They did two parts. They said there was going to be more. Do you think they're holding until this kind of moves on from the news cycle?
No. I think Dean Becquet, who I used to know in IRE years ago, is a consummate professional. And what you do is you nail everything down. And when it is nailed down, then you run it. So I don't think they're finished yet. I don't think they're deliberately holding it.
Let's see. Go ahead. Were you going to say something else? I'm sorry. No. William says, could anyone on the panel state accurately what the president's message was? His address to the public was upbeat and optimistic. Don't allow the virus to dominate and overwhelm your life, to continue to live life, to soldier on. This message resonates with his supporters, while some Democrats are appalled by it. The panel's characterization misrepresented the essence of the president's remarks.
210,000 dead people. 210,000 dead people as a result of this guy's, partially, certainly, as a result of his inaction and inability to say to everybody, wear a mask, and to, in fact, go the other way and say, don't wear a mask.
You know, that quote that the listener sent in is part of it, but he also said, I know there's danger to it, but I had to do it. I stood out front. I led. Nobody that's a leader would not do what I did. And, you know, it's proclaiming himself as standing up to the virus and beating it. And, you know, that may resonate with some people, but as his doctors, even his wimpy doctors, spineless doctors, right, Rosemary? even they say he's not out of the woods yet.
Luis,
I thought his message was very clear. It was three-pronged. I'm a big hero. Just call me Churchill. I'll answer to Winston from now on. Two, the Democrats and their complicit press have turned this into a big deal when it really isn't. It is only slightly worse than the flu, and I'm an old fat guy, and I can beat it. And number three is keep the economy open. We don't have to shut down for this. If it could get me, and I'm completely closed down in the White House, it can get any of you, so why bother to fight it? And that pushes his message of keep the economy going, because that's what he's campaigning on.
Well, in those words, don't be afraid of COVID. I mean, I think, you know, again, as Alan said, 210,000 people dead. We have 7 million people who've been infected. Yeah, we should probably be afraid of COVID.
And those people would not be dead in large part, as they are not in other countries who decided everybody wears a mask.
Louise says you're being too...
He also said in that video, this is a direct quote, all the vaccines are coming momentarily. What momentarily, I assume, means before, somewhere soon around the election. And there is nothing I've seen from any responsible person to say that that is the case. I think he should. So I don't think that's responsible, unlike what the letter writer said. I think that he should be saying we're going to be in this for quite a while longer. We need to redouble our efforts. We need to be very safe. We need to not let magical thinking take over. And I think the transcript of that video is filled with things that are a dangerous message to the public.
Yeah, I agree that it tries to portray his illness as some courageous act rather than the predictable outcome of his own recklessness.
Well, and also that line about I'm immune, maybe.
I might.
He said, I might be. It's kind of setting up that it's okay that I go out and I do my rallies because I'm immune now because I had it and I beat it. Meanwhile, back at the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, on the topic that Jim just brought up, top White House officials are blocking strict new federal guidelines for the emergency release of a coronavirus vaccine, objecting to a provision that would almost certainly guarantee that no vaccine could be authorized before the election on November 3rd. Facing a White House blockade, the FDA is seeking other avenues to ensure the vaccines meet the guidelines. That includes sharing the standards, perhaps as soon as this week, with an outside advisory committee of experts that is supposed to meet publicly before any vaccine is authorized for emergency use. The hope is that the committee will enforce the guidelines regardless of the White House's reaction. The struggle over the guidelines is part of a months-long tug of war between the White House and federal agencies in the front lines of the pandemic response. White House officials have repeatedly intervened to shape decisions and public announcements in ways that paint the administration's response to the pandemic in a positive light. That from the New York Times.
You know, John wrote us, and I don't think we can lose sight of this. I can't believe there are still undecided voters out there, unless they're undecided about whether to vote or not. It won't be the undecideds, it will be who shows up. Please add to your discussion the overt attempts by the Republicans at voter suppression. Thanks, John. Do you think? I mean, there are so many examples now of the ways that they are trying to suppress the vote. It's just remarkable.
Mike?
You know, that story that you were just referencing about how the White House is standing in the way of these new guidelines. The guidelines, of course, are the FDA's way of assuring the public that when a virus is released, it won't just have been rammed through, it will be fully tested and safe. And that will give people comfort to more people to take it, and that will begin to knock this virus down. But by the White House blocking that, you know, because they want to be able to come out before November 3rd and say, we got a virus, we have a vaccine, you know. It shows you how incredibly powerful Mark Meadows is. He's the chief of staff now, and he's the guy that is standing in the way of this. And he, just FYI, Meadows twice now, at least twice, had stepped in when Nancy Pelosi and Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, had come to an agreement about a second stimulus act, and he vetoed it. I mean, he has enormous power that he's wielding on behalf of Trump. Trump, who is kind of on the fringes because of his health problems, perhaps. It's a pretty scary situation.
Mm. Rosemary?
There's one other thing that does, which is to dig at people's faith in vaccines. Already an issue in the U.S. for some people, the anti-vaxxers. But I'm telling you, if Trump could manage to force the FDA to give a tentative approval and then use the Production Act, the War Production Act, to get huge amounts of it, sometimes in before or around Election Day, would you get a shot? Not me, man.
Well, the polling is showing exactly that, Rosemary. Right. You're exactly right.
Less than 30%, I believe. Yeah.
But the result will be that even when they do come up with one that they do clear and has met all the standards and has all the everything done the right way, people will still be skeptical of it now because of everything that's going on right now.
And we can see other examples from other diseases and other parts of the world when people lose basic trust in the institutions of government and in the institute and that the institution, the political institutions, are pressuring the scientific institutions. What's happening here has happened in many other places, and people refuse to get vaccines. People refuse to go to clinics. People simply feel like it's in their own self protection to not follow the advice of their own government, and that we've gotten to this place is really astounding. In addition to the logistics that are going to have to be handled, and the percentage of the country that is already anti-vaccines, this is when we get to that point with a vaccine, it's going to be a very difficult rollout.
Susan writes, sometimes the media does seem to almost delight, and this includes NPR commentators, on All Things Considered, in reporting the latest Trump ridiculous thing. It's almost like we're savoring it, the latest gossip. Yes, report the news, but stop with the licking of the chops. This is why I like the roundtable, since you are serious and indignant, but don't seem to delight in it. No, I don't think any of us get any delight in any of this. I don't know.
That's for sure.
210,000 dead people.
What'd you say, Rosemary?
I am stifling it. I understand that impulse. It's very hard to feel compassion towards someone who has shown the people he leads no compassion. He is a cruel, mean-spirited, ugly man, and it is very hard to say the things that you have to say in decent society. I wish him well. I hope he gets better fast and has a full recovery. I thought Saturday Night Live played it right this weekend when Colin Jost goes, I hope he has a long recovery.
Yeah, Michael Che. Yes, yes. All right. And they've taken a lot of flack on that. And then I believe Alec Baldwin came out and said that they obviously would have been making those jokes if they felt that it was a terminal illness that the president had. But I don't know. Anyway, Fred says, watched as much as I could tolerate last night of the Biden town hall, and it wasn't long. I'm a Biden supporter, but I have a great deal of difficulty listening to him try to answer questions and avoid actually answering them. I fear younger voters will simply not connect with them, and I can totally understand. We need to keep the big picture in mind. Hopefully we can, and he will win. I also watched on YouTube last night the Graham Harrison debate. Every Democrat should view it. Well, I think everyone should view the Graham Harrison debate. That was an amazing debate.
It was. And Harrison is extraordinary.
Really. Very, very good. They should treat that. They should teach that in debate training classes. That was a really good debate.
Can you explain why for those of us who didn't hear it?
Not to... not to be. Let's see. How do I explain it without tipping my hand? Well, Harrison just seemed to eviscerate Lindsey Graham. I think that's the point. I think it was a very good debate in the sense that this was a man who was well coached. He had the facts at his fingertips. He asked very, very pointed questions to Senator Graham, who Senator Graham had a great deal of trouble answering. And also, there was a tremendous amount of fidgeting and all of those things that we talk about that shouldn't matter but often do of somebody who's not exactly looking at his watch but is rocking back and forth and looking off to the side and looking up at the ceiling and not engaged in the conversation. It was interesting to watch. I thought it was it's worth it. It's C-SPAN is playing it about every 4 minutes, so if you get a chance, you can catch it there. Let's see. We go to Fred. Wanted as much as I could. Oh, I just read that. I'm sorry. My apologies. I did not delete. We go to, I don't know who this is from. Daniel says, hey, did y'all know you can pre-order a Trump defeats COVID commemorative coin for $100 at the White House gift shop? That is true. That has been being reported by USA Today and is on the White House gift shop, which is not from the White House as a separate entity, but yes, it's still being sold. We go to Louise, who says, you're being too hard on the Walter Reed physicians. Any adult who is conscious, reasonably coherent, and able to walk can check themselves out of a hospital against medical advice.
As long as he acknowledges the
hospital is not responsible for the outcome. The physicians were following normal and required procedure. This was not related to their military status. I do wonder, however, what about the lying on Saturday, or certainly the misleading
about oxygen
and also the not telling us, and I understand HIPAA, but not telling us when he last tested negative and the questions about his the pictures of his lungs and not releasing that information.
You don't call a news conference and discuss the president's condition and then say, because of HIPAA, we can't talk about his condition.
That's right.
It's a very good point.
The other thing, too, to the listener's point, they could not stop him from leaving the hospital. I understand that. That's his right to leave the hospital if he's able to. But they stood there quietly while, Sean Conley stood there and made these back and forth statements and misleading and sort of vague statements about the health. They kind of put their own credibility on the line by standing behind him. And that's the part, I think, that has everybody concerned.
Right.
You know, so there, you know.
Sue writes,
right. Doctors can make it clear that the patient is leaving and it's not a prison. Of course he can leave, but this is not smart. And they didn't do that. Walter Reed and Trump's own doctors made it sound like, well, it's unconventional, but these are unusual circumstances. It's perfectly in line with medical protocol. It really isn't.
Yeah. He said we were in uncharted waters and he's not out of the woods and these are the concerns, but we're going to let him out at 6:30. That was hard to figure out. Sue says, shame on Rosemary. Osteopaths are doctors. She's probably thinking of chiropractors who are indeed not doctors. While in the hospital being diagnosed and treated for stage 4 breast cancer, I had consults with a neurosurgeon.
Oh, my God. Of course I know the difference. What I'm saying is the guy has COVID. That's like going to a podiatrist for a heart condition.
No, it isn't.
Fauci's office is across the street from Walter Reed. He is the best expert on this in the whole country. And Trump voided him and went to this little weenie who he could control. It's a terrible thing. And no, it has nothing against osteopaths or podiatrists or any other brand. He's the wrong person. It's like Scott Atlas trying to be in charge of his coronavirus task force. It's inappropriate.
He's his personal doctor. Right?
Yes.
But the difference between Rosemary and I on this is that, you know, one really has to go and do the research on osteopathic medicine. Some of the most brilliant doctors in America are osteopaths, DOs, and you know, that's just the case. They are not in any way inferior to MDs.
We go to
not a specialist.
Oh, you know.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
You could be a specialist in a.
No, DO. He's saying, but this guy is not a specialist.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, no, I don't have a lot of respect for him. No,
yeah,
I agree
yeah,
with that.
This guy not a specialist. I understand.
But as an individual doctor, not because he's got a DO.
Yeah. Ann says, can Biden moderator et al. Refuse to participate in the next debate because Trump is contagious? Biden talked about this yesterday and said he was going to follow the science, and if they said it was a good idea, he would do it, and if they said it was a bad idea, he wouldn't do it, which seemed like the right answer at the time, right?
The question is, who's the they?
Right, who's the they? Yeah. But I assume, I mean, even the... We do know as of later last night, that the debate commission said that there would be plexiglass between Mike Pence and Senator Harris, and that there would be 13 feet between the two of them. And but again, neither of them have positive diagnosis, positive. You know, I have tested positive for coronavirus.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I just want to point out to everybody that everybody could talk about Biden and how he could be a little bit more aggressive, or he could do this or could do that. He's in the lead. His lead continues to grow. He just doesn't want to screw it up, and I don't blame him.
I mean, that's another. We're up against a break, but it's a whole other issue, right? Of what kind of campaign you run in this time. It's such a weird time, and some people are going to be saying he should do more. Some people are saying that he should do less. I think, by the looks of it, and the polls would suggest this. That and why screw around with success, but that he's doing the right thing, right? I mean, why would you tinker with that? Let's go to Rich, who said, just a thought. When my wife had liver disease and was given a steroid, she was up cleaning the house and washing the floors at 2 in the morning. Is it possible that Trump's outlandish performance at the Biden debate was enhanced by steroids? Just saying, maybe he was sick before we have been led to believe. Which would have been weird because he was saying that Biden was the one who would be under performance-enhancing and steroids.
It's impossible to know.
Yeah. Mike says, I know you all realize that Trump is a symptom. America's problems run much deeper. Win or lose, Trump's followers are not changing their direction. We need to deal with these fellow Americans, figure out why they believe what they believe, or we will continue down this road of divisiveness, and there may be no going back. Jim, would you like to address that?
Yeah, I continue to say that. You know, even if Trump loses and then in fact actually leaves the White House and we move on to a Biden presidency, we still have this solid percentage that supported Trump that I think will continue to support him even when he leaves office.
Yes.
And how can we move forward in finding ways to rebuild the notion of loyal opposition, of civil disagreements, of compromise, all the kinds of things that have been the essence of making the body politic work. And if we can't do that, the letter writer is quite right. Trump is a symptom. He did not create this situation. He has just ridden the wave brilliantly from his perspective, and I think he has. He's ridden it into office.
Yeah, is Biden the guy that can do it? I mean, of all the people that were on that the big stage for the Democratic nomination, is Biden the guy that can pull it together? I think he's probably one of the few that has the best potential. He has the party behind him, and he has reached across the aisles, and there's still a few guys in the Senate who were there when he was there that he can relate to. And if he can just somehow make a few things bipartisan and compromise himself, it may it may, and I'm not magical thinking here, Rosemary. I think it may begin to break what Jim is talking about, you know?
I think Biden can set a tone at the national level, but I think the fix is really at the state and local level. I mean, and citizens engaging each other in real conversations and getting at this on the ground level. I think
I do have to take a break.
Washington won't be the answer.
Let me, when we come back, we'll finish up with our wonderful panel. We'll be right back after this.
Support.
Morning, welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer. Final round here, last 20 minutes, 15 minutes or so that we have together. And we certainly welcome your letters in the meantime, panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about the Amy Coney Barrett hearings. The big question being the serious political and health risks Republicans are taking in moving forward with the Barrett hearings, despite a coronavirus outbreak that has hospitalized the president, infected a host of his staff and Republican allies, and forced the Senate to pause all votes for 2 weeks, Senate Republicans are pushing forward with the confirmation of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. There's an in-person hearing scheduled for October 12th. Chairman of the Judiciary Committee Lindsey Graham said, "We're going to have a hearing for Amy Barrett, the nominee for the Supreme Court." He said this over the weekend about the first major step in the process. "It will be done safely," he said, "but I've got a job to do and I'm pressing on." It's obvious why Republicans want to plow through. They have a legacy-defining chance to tilt the Supreme Court for years to come, and their ability to do that gets more uncertain after the election. What if they lose the White House and the Senate majority? But there are also significant risks, both to their health and political fortunes, for Senate Republicans in holding this hearing now. We can go into them individually, but I think I'll just go to the panel and talk about some of them are obvious. Yes, you're doing this during a pandemic, and many of the people on your committee are sick and have tested positive. So how do you move forward? Alan.
Well, I'm scheduled to talk to Chuck Schumer in just a few minutes for a half an hour, which we're going to play at 3:30 today, assuming he shows up. I mean, he may not. He's a very busy man. I'm going to ask him about what he can do to put a stop to this nonsense. One of the things he can do is to insist that the protocols of the Senate be adhered to. So, in other words, people show up in person in order to do it. Now, my feeling is Mitch McConnell, Graham, all the other guys would gladly, you know, dispose of themselves if they felt that they could influence the Supreme Court forever and ever and ever. Now, we don't know if the Democrats take the Senate, what they'll do. They could, of course, put one or two more people on the court. They could do whatever they want to do. That's possible. I think we're in a situation now where the Republicans will be damned if they can't go forward with this thing, and in their own minds, and they will.
Mike, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that there is some possibility that this whole COVID thing will disrupt the GOP's ability to put the quorum together necessary to even vote it out of committee. You had Chuck Grassley, who's 87 years old, and he was exposed to Mike Lee, who was in that event in the Rose Garden where so many people may have been infected with COVID, and he's not even getting a test. He may be at risk. There's others that are at risk. Mike Lee, Tom Tillis, had a lot of contact with other people, and they've been tested positive. And if the quarantines kind of dovetail, this could go after Election Day. And the very interesting story I read is in Arizona, Mark Kelly is the astronaut who's running against incumbent Martha McSally. If he wins the election, he could be seated as early as November 30th because she is technically filling in the remainder of John McCain's seat. And if he is elected, he would he would take that under Senate rules. And I didn't know that. So, I mean, and then you get, you know, the three or so people from the Republican Party who had earlier said that they had problems with this nomination going through before an election. You know, this whole thing could be delayed. And I'm sure that'll be interesting to hear this afternoon what Senator Schumer has to say about what kind of strategy, although I don't know he'll be completely candid. You don't want to give away the house.
No, I don't want to show your cards.
Yeah.
But on this question of that Alan brought up about, you know, if the Democrats win the White House and the Senate, and then potentially increasing the number of justices on the court, I think Biden has been unwilling to commit to that. And there have been, you know, some fights within the Democratic Party over whether he should or not. But I would suspect that his people are telling him that the polling is not good on that issue.
No.
That there's no support for it, or not enough support.
You know what my eighth grade teacher, Mrs. Wick, would say to me, right? She would say, "Shata, keep shut." And that's what it's, and that, of course, is what it's all about. He gains nothing by opening his mouth on that subject.
Right. Right. And I think in some of these highly contested Senate races, like the one in Arizona, probably also there's nothing to be gained from committing to such a thing. But perhaps Senator Schumer will have something to say about it today.
Doubtful.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Like,
but there has. Go ahead.
What, Rosemary?
I feel like we're back before the Kavanaugh appointment, when there was lots of hope that he could be forestalled, that he could be forced out, and at least somebody else would come in who wasn't a suspected rapist. And it was very interesting to watch, as you said, but ultimately they had their way, and I do believe that's going to happen again. There will be a 6-3 Supreme Court. That doesn't mean that the Democrats shouldn't make it as hard as possible. I don't think there's any way they can forestall it. At most, it would happen in a lame duck session, no matter who wins.
Right.
On the other hand, looking at strategy for what you do later is really interesting to me. Packing the court is one thing. It is not popular, and it's not the only thing. Maybe even better would be to pass, and Congress could do this, a law on how many votes it takes of Supreme Court justices in order to grant certiorari, which is to take a case from the appeals court. And right now, it's 4. It's 5-4, and so the Republicans and the conservatives will always control that. But if it increased to 6 or 7 justices, then liberals would again have a say in it. It would restore balance without changing the makeup of the court.
Interesting.
That to me is pretty interesting.
Interesting.
That's fascinating. Another strategy I had read about was that as many Democrats are, you know, pushing for the expansion of the court, the packing of the court, so to speak, they're using that as a negotiation with the Republicans behind the scenes to have the Republicans hold off on voting if the Democrats would agree not to do that. You know, and that could be a factor if they make it past Election Day and it's a lame duck session.
Rosemary, I take it that you read that somewhere. The Supreme Court, of course, is a coordinate branch of government and sets many of its own rules. So I'm fascinated by what you just said. Is there some backup on that? In other words...
Yeah, there's very little in the Constitution, actually, about the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so it's a tradition, and it's developed over the decades, and that's how it's always been done. So why would you not be able to do it now? And it also would be in the interest of the Supreme Court to accept that. John Roberts has a great interest in keeping the independent nature of the court sacrosanct. And so if he went to that rule, he still has a 6-3 majority. He would still, even if it were 7 judges that you needed to take a case, he would still have an advantage. And it would give the appearance of, okay, we're back in balance again.
The irony, of course.
That's why it's so.
Yeah.
The irony, of course, is it'll go directly to the Supreme Court for a decision.
Right, yeah. let's see. We have just about 4 minutes, so let me make that time with some. Well, I have a choice. We can go through letters, but I think I'm going to skip that because I want to get a quick read of the room on the. Governor Cuomo versus Mayor de Blasio brouhaha over the shutdown and the proposal. I was listening to Alan's excellent interview with the governor yesterday. The governor is rejecting New York City's shutdown plan for the virus spike, saying he may offer his own. It was an announcement that came quickly and offered that caused confusion over the official response to the virus surge in some areas and threatened to deepen tensions with the mayor. I guess that goes without saying, right, Alan?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. You know, this whole thing, here's my take on it. I think the whole thing started because both of them were making noises earlier. They weren't making noises, but they were positioning themselves to be president. And I think it really ticked off Cuomo. And now this enmity has persisted. Cuomo may be right in some of his objections to what de Blasio is doing, but I have to tell you, it doesn't look good.
Mike?
Yeah.
It's the person you want, president, who can't even get along with someone in his own party, in his own state. And it does look like some of the changes that he asked for are extremely petty, like he changed the date of opening in schools by one day. That couldn't have been decided behind closed doors between the two of them?
I don't think there is closed doors.
Yeah, or even that they don't want to use, the governor doesn't want to use zip codes. He wants a different kind of geographical configuration.
Right.
The optics aren't good, though. It's very easy to assume that this goes back to the bad blood that's been between them for an awful long time. I mean, the zip code thing, Alan, I heard the governor in your interview yesterday, your very good interview with the governor, that, you know, it is a very wide swath when you say a zip code, and perhaps you could zero in a little more accurately and in a targeted way without affecting a lot of people who are not in a big risk right now. I mean, I understand that, but that just seems like a good argument.
But Mike, you got to remember that de Blasio is not well-liked in New York City.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing to me. You know, it's like nobody likes him.
I also think there's the politics of it for the governor, too.
Yeah, that's
should
right.
he want to run for yet another term? You know, when he was primary in the last two elections, it was interesting to see that he lost a lot of upstate counties, but his power base was in New York City. So to kind of maintain control, maintain his profile, and be seen as delivering for his constituencies in the city is good politics.
There were reporters yesterday that were saying, okay, you delayed the press conference by a half hour. You went through all this. Isn't it possible that the two of you could have just sat down together and done this together? And the governor said, no.
That's pretty funny.
Hey, Alan.
Alan, didn't Mario Cuomo once make an unsuccessful bid for mayor of New York before he was governor?
He did, and directed the campaign. I may be wrong.
Right, but I mean, which is a more important job, being the governor?
The governor is a more important job. Right. I mean, the law of political science is that the city is a creature of the state. So the governor has the ultimate power. And as you probably know, Mike, these governors have moved into Broadway, 270 Broadway or wherever there is down there, and they govern from there as well as from Albany.
Yeah.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Very good show, all. I appreciate your comments and thoughts and sharing them with us. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Jim Ketterer, thank you all very much. Alan, thank you. Delight to see you here. And we
Great
look
to
forward
be here.
To hearing your interview with Senator Schumer coming up at 3:30 with an asterisk. He's got to show up in 5 minutes, right?
He does.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
The asterisk.
Yeah, that's the asterisk. All right. Well, we'll cross our fingers for that. Thank you all. We'll be right back with...